So let's talk about music. My name is Sergio Barrer, and I'm a composer and pianist of the classical persuasion. And with me is Rex Eisenberg, a composer, which I met at Chorus America a couple of months ago, and which has a work that really piqued my curiosity, and rightly so, I think. So hi, Rex, how are you?
I'm doing so well, Sergio. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you here. Yeah, the work I was mentioning is called Prophets True or False? True and False, right?
It's called Messiahs False and True.
Okay, so almost.
Close enough.
Messiahs. Okay. It's a very interesting work, but first let me ask you the question I have asked everybody. How did you end up doing this, being a composer?
Being a composer, that's a great question. I was initially trained as a pianist of the jazz persuasion, actually. And I improvised and I composed little tunes when I was in middle school and high school. And I discovered that I had somewhat of a knack for it. And when I went off to college, I discovered the wide world of classical music and classical composing. And I, let's say, went over to the dark side and started writing in the classical vein. Again, felt like I had a knack for it. So I continued doing it. I was a singer, a lifelong singer, and sang in a lot of a cappella ensembles as well, and did arranging in a cappella, in the a cappella setting, and really discovered a passion for voice and for writing for chorus in particular, and found myself in the choral niche and continued writing in the choral vein beyond my schooling and to the present day.
That's great. Now tell me, how did this work came about? The Messiahs
Messiahs False and True, yes.
Messiahs False and True. Okay.
That's a great question. No, you needn't apologize. The piece was written several years ago. I think I initially started the work in 2013, and it was completed in 2014. The piece was written on commission from a group called Cantori New York, which is a wonderful choir in New York City, conducted by Maestro Mark Shapiro, who is a wonderful advocate and champion of new work, and who has commissioned and premiered hundreds of contemporary compositions. The piece, at the time I was working on a work about the Jewish false messiah Shabbatai Tzvi, who was a messianic figure from the Middle Ages. And I found his life and story to be very interesting, but felt that there might be opportunity to have that notion of what it means to put your faith in a leader, put your faith in someone, and have that faith potentially questioned or threatened and kind of expanded out more broadly. So messiahs have been figures that have appeared throughout history, from antiquity to the present day. They're people who of political persuasion, who are religious leaders, who inspire a population to kind of follow behind them. Sometimes they're well-intentioned. Sometimes they're genuinely out to do good in the world. Sometimes they're ill-intentioned and are genuinely out to do harm. But I was less interested in the specific nature of their intention and more interested in what does it mean for us as a society to kind of put our hopes and dreams into one leader and expect them to do it all for us. And why do we kind of go through this cycle again and again, knowing that, yes, there are times when they do succeed. Many times they do not. And we then have to grapple with what happens to us as a society when they inevitably can't live up to the unrealistic expectations that we've put behind them. I wrote the piece, I guess that's kind of the genesis of the work. I don't want to get too much. I don't want to take away too much of what I have to say from later in the conversation, but that's the genesis of the work.
That's very interesting. Now, how did you decide on the text? The texts are amazing.
The texts were a real challenge to put together. I think there were a few things that went into considering which text to pick. The first is the kind of more, let's say, tactical one, which is that I needed to either get permission for, or the text needed to be in the public domain,
right,
which obviously limited the universe of text to a smaller pool. Fortunately, speeches given by US presidents and senators are, as part of the public record, are public domain. So that opened up a wide range of possibilities within that domain. And obviously anything that comes from antiquity is also public domain and readily accessible. The second consideration was I wanted to make sure that there was a variety of texts. So people coming from different political arenas, people coming from different time periods, people coming from different parts of the world, to show the kind of universality of this as a human inclination, to show that this is something that is kind of timeless and universal and happens here, there, and everywhere. I think in America, we seem to be particularly prone to this, mentality. So there's a lot more to, I'm sorry?
This phenomenon of, yes. You know, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there was a lot to choose from within the American presidential canon, and obviously the piece is the texts are primarily in English and for an American audience. I would love for the work to be more global, but that is the primary audience. So I felt it would be important to use figures that most people in the public would recognize. That said, I also wanted to include figures that people would not know necessarily. I don't necessarily know that Shabbatai Tzvi is a figure that people are familiar with, that the average right. person is familiar with. Some of the other figures referenced in the piece are relatively obscure, and that's somewhat intentional as well.
Yeah, but it's interesting. I mean, there was a lot of work gone into the research of this thing. You couldn't come up with this in 5 minutes. I mean, it's just all the texts and all the pairing of the texts, and you know, it's a lot of work.
And you know, to your point about the pairing of the texts too, I also thought very hard about which texts I paired with which music. I think that it would have been easy to make the kind of obvious choices between yeah. this is a person that is good or bad, and so I'm going to put them with kind of, let's say, benevolent sounding or malevolent sounding music. I tried to be a little bit more, make it a little bit more fuzzy. So you may hear a text that sounds really, that really strikes you in a certain way, and you're surprised to hear the author that it comes from based on the music yeah. that it's paired with or what the message is. Yeah. That was somewhat intentional as well.
That's good, because, you know, when we get into Manichaeism, like, you know, this is bad, so I put bad music, and, you know, it loses something. And life is not like that. Life is right. not. You can see a very evil person and not spot it at the first contact, or you
That's
can
correct.
See a very benevolent looking person that really wants to do some things that are not really cool. You know.
That's right. And I think I just didn't want it to be so predictable.
Yeah.
And I didn't want it to feel obvious or heavy-handed in the way that I conveyed the message.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's very good. Okay, let's start listening a little bit to it.
Sure.
You gave me some segments.
I did.
I'm gonna share the sound.
Sure.
With you. We're gonna hear it together, and then we're gonna talk about it. This is the first movement called Consolamini, Consolamini.
Thank you. time has come to reaffirm our enduring spirit. To choose our better history, to carry forward that precious gift, that noble idea passed on from generation to generation. The God-given promise that all are equal, all are free, and all deserve a chance to pursue their full measure of happiness.
That's the section that you marked.
That's right.
Okay. So what was this? This is the beginning, right?
That's correct. This is the very beginning of the piece. The text is Consolamini, Consolamini Populi Meus. That text comes from Isaiah, chapter 40, verses 1 and 2. And it is a kind of iconic line in the Bible for those who are familiar with it. It's, you know, comfort, comfort my people. It is referenced in Handel's Messiah as well. And it's the kind of, it's a moment of true, consolation, given that that's the origin of that English word comes from the same Latin root.
Right.
I'm sorry?
Yes. Yes, definitely.
Yes. Yeah. So the intention of this opening is to really bring people into a space of kind of warmth and embrace. The piece itself is for chorus, organ, bass drum, and spoken narration, which is usually performed by an actor.
Right.
And the narration that comes after this is from Barack Obama's first inaugural address. Obviously, this is a very wonderful, humanitarian, warm message that really, in some ways, embodies the whole moral of the piece, that it's that we can reaffirm our enduring spirit, that we can choose our better history, that the onus is on us as a people to kind of take up that mantle and really be a positive force for good in the world. So that's really where the space of the opening comes from.
Great. Very beautiful piece. It's very well used, the choral instrument, as I call it, you know.
Thank you very much.
It is an instrument, so
it sure is. It sure
it
is.
It gets you, embraces you. You feel that embrace with a little bit of mourning, as you said.
That's the idea.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so let's go now to the second part that you sent me. It's called Vox Clamantis.
That's right.
Okay. Let's hear it, and then you tell us what is this.
Sure.
Second thing about. Let me. One second.
Thank you.
time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action. This carnage stops right here and right now.
That was the music and the beginning of the narration, right?
Correct, yes. So this obviously is a very different tone than the first movement. So this is the beginning of the second movement. So we've been in a space of kind of this warm embrace. The second movement is obviously a very different tone, quite bombastic. This is the first time we hear the bass drum in the piece, which I think is startling for people who have never heard it and hear the bass drum come out of this, you know, kind of really beautiful texture into this kind of bombastic and let's say frenzied kind of manic energy.
Yeah.
The text here is a voice calls in the wilderness, prepare the way for the Lord. So that's the English translation of the Latin Vox Clamantis. Normally that text is set in a very, let's say joyous kind of way. I deliberately set the text in a kind of frenzied kind of way to convey that sense of the fervor, the kind of rapturous fervor that comes around with the receiving of a new leader. This, it's almost like you're swept up in this storm. The text that is spoken by the narrator. I'm sorry?
Very, very well. These are things that are usual in what kind of liturgy? Catholic?
Correct. So these texts are commonly used throughout the choral literature. In fact, actually, all of the texts that are used in this piece in the Latin are texts that were used in Handel's Messiah as well. And if you ever listen to that piece, the texts are very different and they're set in a very, very different way. All of the texts come from the Latin Vulgate translation of the Bible. So obviously they're all biblical. And what's interesting is the text that is in this movement is the actual next sentence after the text from the previous movement. So in terms of the Bible, yeah. And it's obviously completely different feeling, completely different character. The narration that comes after this is from Donald Trump's inaugural address, which is, again, a very different tone than Obama's inaugural address. So you have the kind of warm embrace that Obama gives you. You have this kind of bombastic, kind of vicious energy that comes with Donald Trump and all of his bombastic, his air of bombast.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is... I'm sorry?
The word that always stayed with me from that address was the word carnage.
Correct.
You know,
carnage.
Carnage. Let's stop the... It was about carnage. It was like if it were in a war zone.
Correct. Correct. Like, so it's to show a kind of very different type of messianic message that a large portion of our country, unfortunately, seemed to fall prey to. And in the music, one of the things that I tried to depict, although Donald Trump wasn't originally the text that I used here,
I was surprised to find him here, to tell you the truth. But okay.
Tell me why.
Because, it is very, I mean, in my personal politics, you know, I would not have brought this guy into one of my pieces. He would have been totally forbidden from
that. So No. I understand completely.
You know, it's like I would have found another one, but it's perfectly valid and you are talking about this and it fits perfectly. It's Messiah's faults and truth and I mean, there it is.
There's a reason that the piece is called that. Yes.
There is a reason.
And
there is something messianic about this guy. So
unfortunately there is. And that's the it was interesting. So obviously I wrote the piece in 2014 before Trump was elected or even being considered for office. And the first performances of the piece were in 2015 and 2016. And when people heard the piece and obviously heard the title and what the piece was about, the perception was that the piece was a commentary about Trump, or that the piece became more relevant in the context of Trump's presidency because of what it was saying about us as a society. So there was a different text in this place, and I thought long and hard whether or not to include Trump, because he is obviously an extremely polarizing figure. And I agree that I had the same feeling that my music is a sacred place, and to include someone whose personal politics I find abhorrent in a piece of mine was a very tough decision to make.
Yeah.
At the same time, I think it really makes the message of the piece much more explicit, and it shows the kind of contrast between a genuinely well-meaning messianic figure and one who is truly malevolent and has ill intent, and that that person can have a really damaging, deleterious effect on our culture. What I tried to do with the choral text is, the vocal music is to actually have the chorus split, so the chorus all starts on a unison note. Uh-huh. And over the course of the movement, they split into more and more different factions. So they start out as a single unison, then they split, they each move by a half step, and then they each move a little bit further, and then it becomes a cluster of three notes and four notes and five notes and six notes until the choir, I think the chord is, eight or nine notes. So this notion of it creating actual discord, that it creates an actual schism and an actual separation, and that that's a musical embodiment of the effect of someone like this man. That was what I was trying to convey with the musical language as well.
I see. Yeah, I had something. It's interesting because sometimes we think as composers about doing things with musical devices. I did that with a piece I did about work, that the accompaniment didn't vary because I trying to convey the monotony of work sometimes, it was bam, 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 bam for 4 minutes. And sometimes it communicated, and sometimes in my case, it didn't work so well because it just made it a little bit boring. But, but I was trying to convey that work is boring, but maybe some people don't relate that. But, we try to do those things,
We sure do. We sure do. I think I'm hoping that it came across, and even if it didn't, that's fine. I want the piece to have layers. And, I like the idea of having a kind of unison message in the first movement, and then this kind of schism. The first movement is very homophonic. The chorus sings largely together. Okay. There are some moments of polyphony, but largely they're singing the same music at the same time. Here you really have everybody is kind of screaming at their own pace and screaming in their own voice and at their own pitch.
And I heard that. That's definitely there. I just didn't relate it to the meaning. But when you tell me, they said, it isn't good.
Well, I'm glad the aha. Oh, yeah. I'm glad it was aha. Uh-huh.
You know what I mean, right?
I do. I sure do.
Okay. All right. Now we're going to go to the third segment that you sent me.
Sure.
Which says, omnes nos quasi obes errabimus. What does that mean?
That's great. All are we like sheep who have strayed.
Okay. Got it.
It is time for us to realize that we're too great to limit ourselves to small dreams. We're not, as some would have us believe, doomed to an inevitable decline. Let us begin an era of renewal. Let us renew our determination, our courage, and our strength. Let us renew our faith and our hope. We have every right to dream heroic dreams. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look.
In this
that's something completely different.
Yes, once again, something different. So this comes from the second half of the piece. So to give a little context for where this falls in the piece, the entire piece traces the, let's say, rise and fall of a messianic figure through the kind of anticipation, expectation, kind of, let's say, jubilation around that figure. Then there's a kind of questioning of that figure, an ultimate kind of despair that comes when the figure doesn't live up to their expectations. The movement that comes before this is the one that is quite critical of the messianic figure, where you hear him being mocked in the way that messianic figures often are. And the text is, you know, all who see me mock me. There are also defenders of the Messiah, right? So there are people who are kind of standing staunchly behind this person, whether rightly or wrongly. This movement comes after that, where it's a kind of, for lack of a better expression, come to Jesus kind of moment, where there's a kind of sense where the Messiah tries to bring them back into the fold, and they recognize that maybe they've been too harsh, maybe they have they've been too critical, and there's a moment of brief reconciliation. And so the text here is, all we like sheep have gone astray, each one in his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. So this is really a moment of kind of coming together and the last chance for us to maybe do some good together. The narration that comes just before this music that you've heard is from President Reagan's inaugural address, about how it's time for us to realize that we're too great to limit ourselves to small dreams. We're not, as some would have us believe, doomed to an inevitable decline. Let's begin an era of renewal. So there's this attempt to kind of bring the people back in. And this music is followed with a message of a similar tone from former President Lincoln, talking about how we should strive on to finish the work that we're in, to bind up our nation's wounds, that clearly there has been this moment of divisiveness that we need to come together around and pull ourselves up and mend. So that's what this kind of very pastoral music references. It's the kind of last moment in the piece before the kind of rupture of society, and the moment where the messianic figure is, for lack of a better word, crucified and torn down. So it's a real, it kind of has that similar, quality of reconciliation, that sense of togetherness, obviously, again, referenced by the unison in the choral music at the beginning of the movement.
Yeah, and it's homophonic, right? It's just everybody singing the same thing.
That's exactly right. That's exactly
so,
right.
Yeah, so it's another type of musical language to convey a different thing.
Correct. And even though it's subtle, I still think it's felt, even if that's not explicitly, even if it's not so explicit, I think it's still perhaps understood.
Yeah, no, it conveys the message. Okay, this is the last little segment that you sent me.
Sure.
Nos autem speravamus. What's that in English?
Sure. So the whole text there. Yes. So the whole text there is, I'll just read the English, but we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And it's the idea that they had put faith in this person and they didn't get it. And you'll hear in the music a real sense of just pure just sadness, I think, and a feeling of despondence, a sense of loss, a sense of lack of hope, all of that. So, or at least that's what I imagine you will hear.
Okay.
A hush, solemn stillness went out over the land. The heads of the people were bowed like the waves of the sea when first swept by the tempest, only to rise later in the storm. For a moment, there stole through men's hearts a strange distrust of each other. They looked at their fellow citizens with a searching glance which said not so much, "Who are you?" but "What are you? And how do you feel at this mournful hour?" What was the cause of our grief? It was not because the country had lost a leader, but because the world had lost a man, one whose like we may not see again.
At the end of that moment, you also hear that there's been a return to the opening music, the opening Consolamini, Consolamini theme. And here, obviously, it's in a very different context after hearing, well, you would have heard a half an hour of music in between the first time you heard that theme and now. And, you know, the people are trying they're crying out for comfort. They're crying out for relief because they perhaps have realized that maybe their hopes are dashed. What I love about this is the text that comes after, which is actually from Obama's farewell address. And it's interesting since this is right before the epilogue, so the piece really is bookended by Obama's inaugural and Obama's farewell address. And here he says, "Let us be vigilant but not afraid. It falls on each of us to be the guardians of our democracy, to embrace the joyous task we've been given, to continually try and improve this great nation of ours, because for all of our outward differences, we all share the same proud title, citizen. I will be there with you as a citizen for all of my remaining days. But for now, I have one final ask of you. I'm asking you to believe not in my ability to bring about change, but in yours." And again, this re-emphasizes that message that we are ultimately the stewards of our own fate, that we are, we as individuals are bound up in our own fate and intended to be our own messiahs, and that perhaps maybe we can rely more on our own, on ourselves, and our collective will and our collective power to make the world a better place, and maybe not necessarily put all of our hopes in one person to solve all those problems, that we can have faith in the future if we have faith in ourselves.
Right. That's the message that appears at the end of the piece, right?
That's correct.
That's the message of the piece, basically. The idea behind all these prophets, what they said, and it's a very, very nice message. I would recommend the recordings on YouTube are excellent.
Thank you.
And I would recommend that anybody that is listening, listen to the whole thing, because you got here a little bit of a taste of the thing, but with the actor narrating it, which did a marvelous job narrating all this and doing all these speeches and all this, it really is worth the time. So I encourage anybody that is listening to do it, to spend some time with Messiah, False and True, and with Rex, and with
Thank you Fire. So much.
And thank you very much for being with me and for sharing these insights. I enjoy them very much. I'll listen to it again after I listen to this, because, you know, classical music, as you said, it's layered, and that's the beautiful part of it. Even our arrangement of pop music is layered, but this has layers, and so as you listen to it a few times, you really get into it. And I think that's one of the attractives for me of classical music, that you get to know a piece and you get into it and and then there is more to discover of it. So
absolutely. I would encourage, if I might make a shameless plug, the audience to listen to both of the wonderful recordings that have been produced of this piece. One is by the incredible Incandescent Choral Chameleon as part of their album Deus Ex Machina, which was released last year. It is available on Spotify and any other streaming platform. And they did a wonderful recording of this piece with the organist Nathan Taylor and with a narrator by the name of Paul Hecht, who is an incredible kind of storied Tony nominated actor. And the piece was performed again. The YouTube recording is also fantastic. It is by I also need to give credit to wonderful Vince Peterson, who made sure that the recording happened, and he is just a luminary of every kind in the choral music space, and also an incredible advocate for new music and for me as a composer, and I can't thank him enough for that. The other wonderful recording is by the International Orange Chorale of San Francisco. It's available on YouTube with the wonderful conductor Zane Fiala, Maestro Zane Fiala, who's incredible, organ by Christopher Keady, who is the organist at Grace Cathedral in San Francisco. So really two wonderful recordings that I would encourage you to check out. And thank you again for listening. And thank you again, Sergio, for having me. It was a real joy.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being here. And thank you, everybody. And that's all, folks.